From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccan. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. We wanted to start the show today. You know, we always usually do a little bit of a check-in, but we wanted to start the show today with a bit of a State of the Union. As you and millions of other people hear this show today, odds are you are listening to it while you are bunkered away somewhere, possibly self-isolating. And we want you to know that the four of us, Noel, Paul, Matt, and myself, are doing the same. This is our first episode that we're recording remotely.
Yes, it's true. Ben, are we allowed to spoil what's going on with you right now, or is this just for us?
Please, feel free.
Well, not only are we seeing each other for the first time, well, Paul's usually on the other side of some sort of screen, a glass screen, but now it's a virtual screen. Ben is wearing something of a costume today, and I'm quite enjoying it, / terrified by it.
Well, I just want to describe Ben's situation a little bit. Ben, stop me if it's too much. In the shot of Ben, we've got a luchador mask that is white and red, primarily in color, that Ben is wearing. It looks epic. He's got his headphones on. Behind him, there's the cutest cat that you've ever seen, and some candles, and it just looks like an epic time. I just want to be hanging out over there, but I'm stuck here in my house. Which, by the way, you may hear a child running around every once in a while. Hopefully not, but you may end up hearing that in these recordings. We'll do our best to remove it.
Matt, did you leave out the Baphomet altar on purpose, or were you just thinking we would spare people that detail?
That's just the way my office looks, guys. I'm sorry.
No, I was talking about Ben's Baphomet altar.
Oh, I want to describe everybody's setup here. So, Noel, since you're up right now, I want to say Noel is by a window. He's got a lovely, you're a bit of a connoisseur of art. So Noel's got some awesome art hanging up there in the back, and then one by the window. And you've got kind of a glow from the window, man. It looks really cool.
Oh, thanks, man. It's sort of a backlighty situation. I appreciate you acknowledging my glow.
And is that a Stratocaster? What is that hanging up?
That is a Jazzmaster.
Right there.
Yeah, I've been doing a little work on it. Got the action just like I like it. And got a bunch of cool effects pedals that I've been toying around with, keeping myself from losing my mind.
and let's pass it to perhaps the third and most mysterious bunker. Matt, you look like you are in an episode of one of our favorite shows, The X-Files. You've got this amazingly, dramatic lighting just on what is your left side. There's just a little bit of light.
Yeah, I've got a window open and I've turned off all electrical devices I possibly can, because in testing my mic out here, I noticed that there's electrical interference all over this room. I don't know if it's a power line situation, if it's just the electrical in my house. And I've never really attempted to use one of these mics here before, but it sounds awful.
Oh, wait a second, Matt. So are you using one of those condenser mics, the USB mics?
It is a USB mic, yes, but it looks like an SM58, a standard handheld mic. But
another part of this image of you is you've got one of those pop filters. So when your face is behind that, it's like there's this giant black screen completely blotting out your face. You look like a character from Sin City or something. It's quite remarkable and eerie.
Yeah, one extra thing is I always turn my head when I breathe, because I'm a professional, you know. Shout out to Tay Zonde. All right. let's do this, you guys. By the way, we need to just, again, Ben, you already kind of talked to everybody already, but just to know that it is genuine and coming from our hearts, we really are thinking about each and every one of you, specifically you listening to this right now, and what you're going through, what you're having to do to stay safe and protect everybody else. Sometimes right now it feels scary, I would say. There's a lot of anxiety that comes along with our situation that we all find ourselves in. But just know that by taking the precautions you're taking, you're not only protecting yourself and the people you love, but everybody. So just keep going strong.
Well said. Well said. And we want to hear from you folks. So we've given you a brief update on our bunker situation. So we'd love to hear updates from your neck of the global woods. If you want to send us a photo of your current battle station, if you want to give us your observations, reach out. Feel free to. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. All that jazz. As we have said, we're all in the midst of this pandemic occurring together. We have more coming regarding the current crisis, the conspiracies, and the consequences involved. And today we thought, since so many people are suffering from COVID-19 news fatigue, that we might collectively enjoy a dive into something largely unrelated. Chemtrails. Are they real? Oh, buddy. Here are the facts.
Okay, first off, we need to differentiate between some pretty often conflated concepts, phenomena. While chemtrails are pretty controversial and often the subject of tons of conspiracy theories, contrails are a distinct, different, and actual facts proven thing. So what is a contrail? It all comes down to jet engines spew out super, super hot air. And because water vapor is also one of the byproducts of the exhaust, the air is also incredibly humid. Where these jets fly, the air is typically cold, often below negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Additionally, the atmosphere at that altitude has very low vapor pressure, or the force that's exerted by a gas on its surrounding environment.
Yeah, that's right. And when this jet engine is emitting this hot, humid air into that atmosphere you described, Noel, that's so cold and has low vapor pressure, it results in condensation. And the water vapor coming out of the engine very quickly condenses into water droplets, and then it very quickly crystallizes into ice. Those are what we see forming behind a jet engine. Those are the contrails, and that stands for, of course, it's short for, rather, condensation trails. We have a pretty good example of like how you can witness this phenomenon for yourself.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. If you've ever been outside before when it's very cold, or maybe inside, and you breathe out slowly, you know, more of a than a pushing air quickly out of your mouth, that puff of air dissipates really quickly when it's dry, even if it is very, very cold. But, you know, if you do that on a day that's a little more humid, it might stick around quite a bit longer. And it's the same with contrails. When the atmosphere is more humid, the contrails, just like your breath, they're gonna linger out there in the atmosphere for a longer time before they dissipate. But again, when you've got a drier atmosphere, they are going to just kind of just go away a lot faster. And you've probably witnessed this before. You've probably seen a couple of different kinds of contrails or streaks across the sky that maybe you think is a contrail or a chemtrail, but you're not really sure. But you've probably witnessed them dissipate extremely quickly behind a jet engine or, you know, an airplane, an aircraft. And you've also probably seen them linger for a long time. It feels like hours. Just remember that you have seen this before.
Right. You've seen it before, but many of your friends may have assured you already that you have sometimes seen contrails and sometimes seen something else, something called a chemtrail. According to its proponents, a chemtrail is something much more insidious, because while a contrail is understood to be more or less benign, according to these theories, a chemtrail is purposely designed and dispersed to expose large swaths of unknowing people to any variety of chemicals.
So here's the idea. Basically, these chemicals might be intended to create some sort of widespread physical change to populations, animals, the environment, or plants, or create some kind of widespread psychological phenomenon, changes in human beings. For example, a lot of conspiracy theorists, to use the term of abuse, I guess, here, often get hung up on this notion based on super anecdotal evidence that epidemics of flu-like symptoms, for example, can be connected to instances of chemtrails. Or in an incredibly extreme version, the idea is that chemtrails could be used as a form of population control, weeding out the sick and elderly. So this is all some pretty extreme stuff. Let's go into a quick history of this before we get too bent out of shape here.
Right. So if you were, let's say, in the 1970s or 1980s, trying to learn about the idea of chemtrails, you wouldn't have found the term. It's fairly recent. These theories first came into the mainstream world in the 1990s under Art Bell's work at Coast to Coast AM. And they blew up in the mainstream, first on the fringe, but then in the mainstream. They're actually mentioned in Congress. U.S. House Bill H.R. 2977 banned various types of weapons in space, but it also originally started out with a reference to chemtrails. Ultimately, this reference was removed, but you know, people who believe in chemtrails will say this thing in Congressional Record is indicative of it being a real problem. That was on October 2nd, 2001.
But the mention specifically alludes to it not existing.
Oh,
right.
The mention says the mention when it was introduced by Denis Kucinich did imply that there was potential for some kind of weapon that would be called a chemtrail, but they removed it because there's no scientific proof about this.
I see. I think I'm confusing this with the group of Harvard engineers that David Keith was leading, who is the professor of applied physics at Harvard's John A. Paulson School of Engineering. And there was a quote from him that says this: "We have not seen any credible evidence that chemtrails exist. If we did see any evidence that governments were endangering their own citizens in that manner, alleged in chemtrail conspiracies, we would be eager to expose and stop such activities."
Yeah. Although we didn't do that when we were using essentially chemtrails as a weapon of war during, the Vietnam War or in other conflicts where we were actually spraying things in the air to kill, you know, both plants and to potentially harm enemy combatants.
Oh, no, I mean, not even to mention things like weaponizing insects. And this is a crazy one, but there was that whole experiment where the U.S. government dropped flea bombs on poor parts of, I believe it was Louisiana and Florida, Ben, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
But just specifically, I mean, I'm not trying to discount or play that down, Noel. It's just specifically using aircraft to spray noxious chemicals over a population or an area,
right?
As a weapon of war.
Oh, totally. And I only mentioned the flea thing because it was specifically to spread biological agents to, like, you know, diminish people and give them, like, you know, malaria and stuff, or potentially you use it as an agent of war as well.
Sure. And really what we're setting up here is the difference between the intense theories that are out there, right, and then what established science says about chemtrails, specifically spraying at these higher altitudes.
Right. That's why David Keith's quote is one of my go-to answers when people ask what the scoop is regarding the misinformation, the disinformation, the allegations, and of course the facts, because that statement seems pretty conclusive, and Keith and his team of engineers are not some kind of rogue renegades from the ivory towers of the academy. What they're stating is the status quo establishment conclusion. And while this may seem comforting, the truth, it turns out, isn't as cut and dried. We'll tell you the truth, warts and all, after a word from our sponsor. Here's where it gets crazy. This actually happened. Chemtrails actually happened, and not just the dispersal that you had mentioned earlier, Matt, in times of war, or famously over St. Louis here in the U.S. We know for a fact that the United Kingdom did conspire to secretly experiment on their population, not just their service members, but on their civilian population, through the deployment of what could be reasonably described as chemtrails.
Yeah, so here's the basics. Starting in 1940, the British government used the unsuspecting domestic public as actual facts guinea pigs for biological and chemical warfare experiments. In more than 750 secret ops, hundreds of thousands of people were subjected to what they called mock biological and chemical warfare attacks from aircraft, ships, and road vehicles. And this went on until 1979.
Yeah. And don't be fooled by that idea of mock biological and chemical warfare attacks. These weren't all dry runs. These weren't all war games. In fact, many of these tests involved releasing potentially dangerous chemicals and microorganisms over huge amounts of the population without the public ever being told. And think about that span of time there. That's almost 40 years, 1940 to 1979. These were designed by the Ministry of Defense to assess what would happen to the UK if Russian forces released, you know, clouds of a biological or chemical weapon across the country.
But here's the deal. In most of the cases throughout this long period of time, the trials didn't use biological weapons, but some kind of alternative that the scientists thought would maybe mimic germ warfare in some way. And the Ministry of Defense claimed, you know, these substances that they were using were actually going to be harmless. However, and it's a big however here, there are certain areas around the UK where the families there would have children, and these children would have birth defects. And those families in particular are demanding a very specific and public inquiry into the substances that were used during these tests, and really just to get as much public information as possible about them.
Yeah, and they met with no shortage of red tape, something that you could arguably describe as stonewalling. So the outcry that hit in, let's say, 2002, 2004 came about partially because of something called Operation Antler. Operation Antler was the official investigation into the activities that we're citing from 40 to 79. They were headquartered, or masterminded, maybe is a better word, from a place a lot of people in the U.S. probably have never heard of. It's called Porton Down. Porton Down is a science compound in Wiltshire, England. It's called Porton Down because it's just northeast of Porton, which is a village near Salisbury. It's home to two British facilities, the Ministry of Defense's Defense Science and Technology Laboratory, and a site of Public Health England. The DSTL, Defense Science and Technology Laboratory, has been known as one of the most secretive and controversial research facilities in the British military for over 100 years. So think of what's the place in Australia? Pine Flats?
Pine Gap?
Gap.
Pine Gap.
There you go.
That's Mind it. It's gap. Like Pine yeah. Gap. Yep. And the inquiries that the public and former service members have been raising establish that a number of the people participating in the service volunteer program, aka where the soldiers can sign up to be exposed, they claim that they were tricked into taking part in these experiments. They had consent, but not informed consent. And then some of these retired service members also claim to have suffered long-term illness or injury. In some cases, you know, similar to the, well, in some ways, similar to Vietnam veterans reporting of exposure to Agent Orange. And then again, as you said, Matt, long-tail intergenerational effects like birth defects. And it doesn't stop there.
Yes, it's true. Research by a gentleman named Ulf Schmidt, who's a professor of modern history at the University of Kent, revealed that British military aircraft dropped thousands of kilos of chemicals that possessed, quote, largely unknown toxic potential on British civilian populations in the Salisbury area in Wiltshire, Cardington in Bedfordshire, and Norwich in Norfolk. Around 4,600 kilos of the chemical zinc cadmium sulfide, which is now known to be, or at least thought to be, pretty carcinogenic potentially on account of its containing cadmium. And this was allegedly dispersed from ships, aircraft, and moving trucks, or as they call them in the UK, lorries, between 1953 and 1964.
And again, we're looking to Ulf Schmidt here, who wrote a book called Secret Science. And within this book, he also shows that commuters on the London Underground were subjected to very similar illegal experiments. And, you know, just before we continue on here, do you guys remember, or you listening, do you remember warnings about tests within New York subway system,
mm-hmm.
where they were going to do some testing with dispersants of some sort? To see how chemicals or agents would move throughout the transit system underground in New York. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah. I love that reasoning, too. Let's just see what happens.
Well, yeah. Well, there's this concept of attempting to experiment with, in this case, the thing I'm talking about here, to see where a contagion would travel if it got released in a specific station.
Oh, I see. You
know, underneath Manhattan.
In terms of the air patterns or where it would be carried, like through which tunnels and where it would go, or?
Well, yeah. And as commuters, you know, are subjected to it, get onto a train, they get off somewhere, how quickly does it disperse throughout the Manhattan Island, or, you know, how far does it go?
That's fascinating.
But this is the same kind of thing here a little bit, but it's closer to human experimentation in my opinion, at least.
Right. So this is very important. I want to interject here. It is still human experimentation. The stuff in New York, from what I can recall, was just exactly what you said. It was a modeling exercise to take an inert substance or material that would still behave the same way as a weaponized aerosol and be trackable so we could monitor the spread, which is actually a pretty smart thing to do. But the ethical quandary there is if you tell people you're doing that, no matter how transparent you are about how harmless it is, people aren't going to ride public transit if they can help it. Why would you expose yourself? And you know, this is an understandable fear because like we referenced with Professor Schmidt in his book, Secret Science, the operations on the London Underground involved the release of large quantities of a bacteria called Bacillus globigi. And the scientists wanted to determine whether, quote, long distance travel of aerosols in the tube was due to transportation within the trains themselves, or whether the big weak point was the air ventilations in the tube. From what I recall, both were pretty bad. But this isn't all that the UK did. We're going to pause for one more sponsor break, and we'll be back to tell you about how these experiments went global while they were still classified and top secret. So we have returned. It's true, conspiracy realists, these experiments did go global. The research also reveals that these experiments occurred in another part of the world that was a British imperial possession at the time. This was Nigeria. Chemical warfare trials were held there as well, and we even found the specific area of Nigeria in which they were held.
A place called Obanagoro in southern Nigeria specifically was the site of four British Cold War scientific missions that spent a total of around 15 months dispersing and assessing the effects of large quantities of experimental nerve gas. weapons. So this location was important because it permitted field trials to be carried out in a tropical environment. And of course, that was not in Britain or Australia.
Right, importantly. And that means that there was much less oversight, and people were also much less likely to be able to successfully inquire with the government about the possible detrimental effects.
And before we, you know, we kind of conclude here, there's another experimentation that calls back to just this concept of putting out weird agents or clouds of terrifying things to test both how the air is going to disperse them, in whatever other parameters are being tested there. There's an instance from 1952 where on the west coast of Scotland, there was a cloud of bacteria, not just any bacteria, not like the ones that were released into the London Underground, literally plague bacteria. A cloud of it that was released to see, essentially to test again, like in all these instances, what happens to this stuff when it just goes into the air? Where does it go? What happens to it? Well, there was a fishing boat that happened to travel through this cloud of freaking plague bacteria. It's a vessel full of fishermen. They just went right through it, and there was this horrible, you know, feeling in the pits of the stomachs of the people experimenting that, oh, wow, let's see. I wonder if any of those guys are actually going to get plague. Ben, I don't know if you read about this one, but it was just really, really creepy to think that unknowingly you could drive your boat, your ship, that has a bunch of just working class people through a cloud that ends up being plague.
Yeah, the same reports confirm that the government was dispersing anthrax, like not an inert chemical, actual anthrax. And they were doing this not just off the Scottish coast, but also all around the Caribbean. And that that even in the highest halls of UK government, there was tacit approval. So people may have had plausible deniability, but they knew what was going on and they let it happen again for decades and decades and decades.
And just one other quick thing here. It's noted in both the Independent and I believe in the Guardian newspaper that the Bahamas, this the territory of the Bahamas, was seen by a lot of the scientists performing these kinds of tests as the absolute best place to carry out these kinds of surface tests without any kind of restriction. Just be aware of that.
And was there something that was particularly appealing about these tropical climates?
Yeah, a couple of things. First, just the environment, given that it had enough similarities geographically, if not climate-wise, it just had enough geographic similarities to the United Kingdom, which again is, you know, a collection of archipelagos. So this is a good way to see how a landmass with a huge coastline could be affected by maritime dispersal. That's why it's off the coast instead of, you know, on the land in those experiments.
And just to give a little bit of clarity there about the Bahamas, it was, this is a quote from the Independent, it was an uninhabited island in the Bahamas, in the sea near that uninhabited island. So it wasn't, you know, necessarily directly on up the population of the Bahamas where people are living, but it's still very close. And with all of the winds that are happening out there, you know, you can pretty much predict the weather, Ben, but what's the quote we always like to use about the weather? meteorologists are...
Oh, alchemists? No.
Yeah.
Well, you're right, though. Especially in that case, they were not working super hard to do their due diligence about whether people would be endangered. The specific stuff they deployed was Venezuelan equine encephalitis in that uninhabited island in the Bahamas. This kills donkeys and horses, but it can also kill human beings, and it can be spread by mosquitoes when they bite the horses or the donkeys. This is in addition to, by the way, G-Series nerve agents that was deployed in Nigeria. That can do things like cause a loss of certain bodily functions. If you survive, you'll have long-term neurological damage, psychiatric disorders. And then, of course, we've mentioned the bacterium Bacillus globigi. I'm not entirely certain on that. That can also cause fevers, occasionally fatal. This is heavy-duty stuff. This was not... You know, we can't emphasize this enough. This was not just like silly string they were spraying around or Febreze or something, neither of which are sponsoring the show. These were weapons of murder, potentially. And you can say that this was a scenario to figure out how it would spread during an attack from an antagonistic force. But the reality of the matter is it was not a dry run. The idea that we're doing this for quote-unquote defense falls far short of justifying what actually happened. So this all means that, yeah, in a way, chemtrails were very, very real, at least if by chemtrails we mean the concept of illegal and dangerous aerosol dispersals.
Well, you certainly don't need a weatherman to know which way the eastern equine encephalitis blows. It's whichever way the wind blows, I guess. That's upsetting though. But yeah, I guess we can put that one to bed. I mean, I don't know. Like when we talk about chemtrails, though, I think the big picture thinking behind them as a conspiracy is largely still kind of, you know, the jury is out. If not, it feels entirely debunked. This is a very specific instance where it's something that we could absolutely classify as a chemical disbursement at high altitude. But what we think of as being chemtrails as like the kind of holy grail of conspiracy theory circles, I think we're all still in agreement is a bit spurious, yes?
Right. So when people say chemtrail, you know, like you said, Noel, they're thinking big picture often about what looks like a contrail. However, this high altitude disbursement did occur. We know it occurred multiple times. We mentioned 750 times, but the full extent of the test in these programs went into the thousands. Isn't that right, Matt?
Well, yeah, at least according to the latest numbers from Professor Schmidt's research that we mentioned earlier. The investigation, or his investigation as of, I believe, 2015, was that when this was? July 2015, when this article in the Independent was written. He is believing that up to 30,000 secret chemical warfare substance experiments were carried out. And most of that was occurring at the facility or the area we were referring to called Porton Down, where there are British soldiers being experimented on specifically.
Right. So that 750 number is the piece of the pie that applies to the public so far as we know. Yeah. And this means that, like so many of the modern conspiracy theories in this, our new age of folklore, there is a grain of truth here. There is a seed of fact in this, or a spray of fact, if we want to be real jerks about our language. This is only one example of government doing this. Of course, as we've mentioned, the United States has done multiple experiments like this. We haven't dived into it yet, I would be incredibly surprised if the USSR, or the FSR as it's called now, was not doing the same thing at some point. At this point, here in 2020, members of the UK public, including retired members from military service, are still pushing for further investigation. In a way, again, it's similar to, you know, Agent Orange allegations. But what do you all think? I mean, this is proven. This actually happened. Is this the whole dirty story now finally revealed, or is there more to it? In other words, is this the tip of a biological warfare iceberg?
It's a really tough thing to wrap your head around, knowing that in a way, wherever you live, your government may see to it that there are experiments either on you or, you know, your friends, your family, your neighbors, somewhere within, you know, a short drive of where you live, there could be experimentation occurring on the people, the moms and dads and sons and daughters and all of that. It's a really tough thing to know that. And it's what we're talking about today. It's Cold War time. Most of this occurred, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ben, but during Cold War times where there are, no matter how warm they are, there are threats, there are outside threats. And these, you know, governments are attempting to stay abreast of situations, stay ahead of technologies, and germ warfare is one of those things. And many times that is to make sure we know what's going to happen if we, when I say we, I mean, if our population gets hit by this type of germ warfare, what's it going to look like? How could we respond to it? And maybe that's giving a little more of a benefit of the doubt to the situation. I don't know. The one thing I would want to add here at the end is to caution yourself when thinking about this kind of stuff and then perhaps applying it to our current situation with the novel coronavirus and with COVID-19. I can't sit here and tell you that there isn't some other reason behind the release of this, but I also would say it's very unlikely that it's any kind of a attack. Right.
Well, it's highly unlikely. There's no way.
Highly unlikely, but I think viscerally we can understand the threat and the feeling associated with like what it would be like to be a victim of someone knowingly doing something like what we're experiencing right now. Right. I mean, I think like psychologically that is something that is very unsettling, thinking about, you know, what it would take for someone to have that little disregard for human, you know, life and human sanity to do something like that, knowing how isolated and scared everyone is right now with this current situation. I think that's where my mind goes. Not that our situation right now is in some way some version of this. It's more just the psychological, you know, fallout of dealing with a situation like this.
I'm tempted to agree. I think that's an important point. But we would be remiss if we didn't hit that point, and if we didn't also note, we're going to have some more updates on COVID-19 coming. A lot of people on Twitter and various platforms have asked to hear a bug out bag specific episode. I would recommend we're going to do one specifically on bug out bags and how to get out of areas if you need to, and you don't need to yet. As a matter of fact, please stay indoors, as they say on Mitchell and Webb. But we have to point out this. The idea that COVID-19 could have been manufactured, it's been floated by a bunch of different entities and institutions, including members of the Chinese government. But these still remain conspiracy theories. It's similar to the idea that HIV was purposely created to, you know, to weed out some specific part of the global population. These would be terrible weapons to choose for that. I think we said this in our earlier COVID episode, because although it spreads quickly, it doesn't behave the way that a bioweapon ideally would behave. And if you wanted to make one, which we'll talk about at length in another episode, if you wanted to make one and you actually tried, you would do a much better job than COVID-19. This is still dangerous, but it being dangerous, I think the scariest part of it is that it had a natural origin. It did not take human intervention to make it as much of a threat as it is today. And to the point about misinformation, please, 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 when you're out there on the internets, when your relatives are sending you posts from someone they heard from Facebook or something, please politely ask for a source, because misinformation and panic are as contagious as a pandemic. They're a pandemic all their own. There's nothing wrong with asking people for that kind of source if they say something that, you know, feels weird. Because, you know, Matt, Noel, you guys have noticed, it seems like everybody's got a cousin who somehow works at the Pentagon nowadays, right?
Sure feels that way. And, you know, I would say even when it comes to positive news, you know, because nothing is worse than false hope. And there might be some people that would disagree with me, but it feels like the way the, not to get too political, but the way the administration is handling this right now, it's a little off in that there are some claims being thrown around that don't have sources to back them up, or that have kind of anecdotal sources, like in terms of like a miracle drug that'll like cure this thing. And I think a lot of folks that get their news from certain locations and from these press conferences will be largely disappointed. And when they find out this is not, in fact, what it was set out to be. And the idea of availability of masks and availability of relief and ships that are coming to people's rescue in New York and California, we've yet to see those things come to fruition. And there's a lot of overpromising and underdelivering. And I would caution people to, you know, temper expectations in that respect too. I mean, don't, you know, feel hopeless, but let's just be realistic.
I'm going to make a light comment here really quickly. And I promise everybody we're going to wrap up. Noel, as you were talking, I don't know if you noticed, but I which cat is that, Ben?
That is Dr. Venkman.
Dr. Venkman in the background has been quietly giving these cute little meows. And Ben, wearing his luchador mask, has been trying to get Dr. Venkman to be quiet. And the image, Ben, mm-hmm. is one of the cutest, funniest, weirdest things that I've experienced in a while. And I just want to thank you for lightening my day, lighting up my gosh. Day a little bit. And while Noel was like, while Noel was talking about all the crazy misinformation that we're kind of wading through at this point.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I guess I won't put him in the cat gulag just yet. but, you know, it's always weird when you start working with a new producer, right? to that point, though, about the danger of this positive stuff, this false hope, it's true, you know, as there have been U.S. government officials who have said, I believe it was U.S. government, who have said cockamamie things like, just put air from a blow dryer up your nose and you'll be fine. And there are people selling, you know, flim-flam and woo-woo kind of cures. If something sounds too good to be true, the unfortunate fact of the world in which we live is that it's because it is untrue. So, well said. We also want to know what you think, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you are happy. We hope you're healthy. We hope you're safe. Just as importantly, we hope that you are exercising critical thinking in these times. We want to hear from you. As we always say, you are the most important part of this show. So you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter. We like to recommend Here's Where It Gets Crazy on our, it's our Facebook community page. We want to know what you're going through. We want to know what your thoughts are, and we also want to know if you have any other stories of illicit biological warfare testing that you feel your fellow listeners should know about. So please let us know. And if you hate the social media, as we always say, we have a couple of other ways for you to get in contact with us immediately.
You can always call our number. It is 1-833-STDWYTK. You can call us and leave a message just like this person did at 1:22 p.m. on the day we recorded this. And here we go.
Hey, guys. I love your show. I just want to say thank you. I'm calling. I just got done listening to the Do We Have Enough for Everyone podcast. And caught the tail end, you know, talking about the coronavirus. And I just wanted to add that my significant other, she is a registered nurse. We live outside of the city of Milwaukee. That's about all the information I want to, you know, let you guys know. But anyway, she has been responsible for taking care of one of the three patients that is infected with the coronavirus. Some specifics about him. He's mid-30s, not immunocompromised, very healthy, and he was infected. And he is now in critical condition. Just wanted to say that, all these millennials are not too worried about the severity of it, that they're invincible and stuff like that. And, this gentleman is, may or may not lose his life. So maybe that'll help people take it a little more seriously. But anyways, hey, thanks again, guys, and look forward to hearing the next show. Thank you.
It's unfortunately a common tale that's happening in the United States more and more often in the past few weeks and days. People who would seem to be otherwise healthy, would seem even to be outside of the target demographic for COVID cases requiring hospitalization, are falling one after another into hospitals. Just a few days before we recorded this, in fact, a 12-year-old child here in Atlanta, Georgia, was hospitalized with what was originally diagnosed as pneumonia and then later realized to be COVID-19. So this is affecting everybody. To your point, caller, this is also affecting millennials as well. Just because you are, say, 25 years old or under 63 or something, it does not make you immune, and it does not mean that you should be playing around. Is that about the size of it?
It's one of these things, too, where, I mean, the story just keeps evolving where, one minute it's like, oh, don't take ibuprofen. And then it's like, ibuprofen's fine. And one minute it's like, people with that are symptomless are worse vectors. They apparently carry a higher viral load is one thing that I saw reported. So that's the reason it's so scary right now, is because people don't know who has it and who doesn't have it because there aren't enough tests. And potentially folks that are asymptomatic are like, acting as super spreaders because they think they're all hunky-dory. So it's just the kind of story that just keeps evolving. And without becoming a paranoid, news freak, I think it's important that we keep an eye on it and just do our part and do not play around. Stay home.
Agreed. 100%. 1,000,000%, actually, if we're going to violate the rules of math there. We are also, just like you, individuals. So you can find us on the internet outside of our show. This is the first pandemic in our hyper-connected age. So we are, like many people, using social media and online tools to stay connected, even when we can't physically be together. So with that in mind, if you want to find us as individuals, there are a couple of ways to do so.
You can check me out exclusively on Instagram, where I am at HowNowNoelBrown. I have a cat, too, a tailless cat named Fernando, who isn't quite as fluffy and cute as Ben's cats, but really has his moments. And you might see him pop up on my stories from time to time, and maybe some of the weird ambient music that I'm making to pass the time.
Agreed. Fernando's great, a.k.a. Robert. He's a cat with moxie.
That's right. That's right.
And you can hear the dogs barking in my neighbor's yard on my storyless Instagram account, Matt_Frederick. I heart something. I don't remember what it is.
I love this part of your character that just doesn't give a crap about social media. It's really charming. I'm not joking. I enjoy that about you,
Matt. Well, you just won't find anything because I don't do anything. But I'm there. So, if an emergency happens, maybe I'll publish something and you'll know about it.
A social media emergency.
Yeah.
An SME. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all waiting.
Oh, speaking of which, acronyms that begin with S and are three letters long. Can you believe that Saturday Night Live is gone dark for like the first time maybe ever?
I can. Yeah, it's the right thing to do.
It is the right thing to do, but that was when I was really like, okay, this is real.
All the late shows as well. I believe Stephen Colbert has recorded some monologues from his house. Ira Glass is just like us. He's recording from his house. We're aiming collectively to keep making these podcasts as long as we can, and we hope that it gives you you know, something to connect with, something to hear, and we hope that you communicate with us. We aim to keep going until the proverbial or literal lights go out. If you want to find me on the internet, you can find me at Instagram at Ben Bolin, in a burst of creativity, as I always say. If you want to share news or ask about the veracity of various things related to the pandemic, you can always find me on Twitter at Ben Bolin HSW. Been fielding a lot of great questions there and some pretty off the wall ones. But just to reiterate everything Matt and Noel have said, this is serious. We are here, and we are working ardently. You can't hear Paul on this podcast, but he's tuned in as well. So we're hoping to be here for you.
Yeah, and the best place to find information is always, at this point, the CDC, the WHO, an organization like that that's trying to keep tabs on as many people as possible and really find a vaccine as quickly as possible. So just keep your eyes open and your ears to the ground, and we'll be here just like you.
And if none of those means of contacting us quite quarantine your badgers, never fear, we have one solid way that you can reach out to us all the time, anytime, 24/7. That's right, our good old-fashioned email address. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.